Hey there, my name is Bethany Bravery, and I'm the host of the Bringing Her Hope podcast. But even more than that, I want you to know that you are welcome into this conversation, that there is a seat for you at this table. And I can't wait for you to meet each and every one of these amazing women who I know will inspire you to also live out the story that God is calling you to, and to give you hope that He will be faithful to redeem your story as well. We will laugh together for sure, and most definitely cry. But you know what? I get so excited about the thought that together we can grow deeper in love with Jesus, that we can jump with both feet into the adventure He has for us. So get ready. It's going to be a crazy, amazing ride. My guests today are Jennifer and Gregory Cummings. Gregory and Jennifer have experienced a lot of life over the last 14 years of being married, and it does not seem to be slowing down. But most recently, they welcomed two nephews into their family, all while navigating grief and blending two families. This is actually part two of a story that we've already shared in season one. There was a bonus episode with my dear friend, Janae Nixon, who we lost September 11th of 2019. And this is the follow-up story of Janae's sister, Jennifer, and Janae's brother-in-law, Gregory, that they took Janae's boys on. And so I wanted to share this story with you and see how God is continuing to work through Janae's story, but then also introduce you to Jennifer and Gregory Cummings. Hey friends, Bethany Bravery, welcome back to another episode of the Bringing Her Hope podcast. I'm excited to introduce you to my new guests, Jennifer and Gregory Cummings. Thanks for being on the show, friends.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I am a mom and a wife and a taxi cab driver and a referee and all the things that fall underneath the motherhood cap. I'm his partner in our real estate business and help out kind of in whatever avenue of family life that I'm called. And what else? We've been married for 14 years, have five boys under our roof right now, and three are our biological, and then we gained two extra blessings, my nephews, here about a year and a half ago.
My name is Gregory. I am this amazing woman we are traveling through life with. It has been a crazy ride for 14 years. I just look forward to the next bazillion years, but I'm a super outdoorsman, love doing anything outside, love doing something with my boys. Anything with my family has kind of been a passion of mine. So trying to raise boys that just fear God, but understand that they are going to be the next man, next generation. Mm-hmm. That's a hard challenge.
So beautiful. So what's interesting about this episode that I want our listeners to know and our viewers to know is that we interviewed your sister, Jennifer, Janae Nixon, just a couple weeks before she passed away. And that's in season one. It's a bonus episode that we placed in season one. So I'll make sure and link that in the show notes. But she just shared about living a life of legacy. And we actually pivoted the title. We were going to be talking about being present in the life that you're in, but we changed the title to Living a Life of Legacy, which is so what she did. And so you guys are really continuing this story. And so why don't you take us on this journey of really how to navigate new beginnings in after dealing with a loss. Take us on that journey.
All right. I'm going to start, which is the day that everything happened, September 11th, 2019. It was a day that I had anticipated just because of the loss of, if you listen to Janae's, our mom passed away from the same illness that she had. And the reality of knowing that there is no cure for this disease. And aside from a miracle from the Lord, just completely redoing her entire inner workings of her body, mm-hmm. I had kind of from the point that my mom passed away and finding out that Janae had this, just deep in my heart, I knew that the day would come that I would bury my sister and that I would have to say goodbye to life as I knew it. So September 11th, 2019, I got a call when I was volunteering at my boys' school saying, hey, Janae's in the hospital. You need to get down there. They don't know what's going on. I get there in kind of a rigmarole trying to find out where she was because she was not in the ER anymore. They had immediately transferred her. And from the cath lab, they had done some work on her heart and put some stents in and then had moved her over to ICU. And by that point, probably a handful or two of like closest family and friends had showed up at the hospital just to be there for support. And they had, yeah, they had done a procedure, put, I think, I don't even know how many stents in around her heart to just support the vessels that were there. But she was stable. They moved her into ICU. They said as soon as they got her comfortable that they would let us go ahead and go back. We're sitting there in the waiting room just kind of talking like, okay, what is this going to look like when she comes home? What could recovery look like? But honestly, the pit of my stomach, I knew this was probably the end. Sitting there, I was eating my lunch and code blue went across the intercoms. And I knew at that moment, like, this was the end. She's gone. And as soon as that code ran through the ICU floor, the chaplain came out and got my dad and I, and he's like, I want you guys to come back here if you're willing. And we went back to her room, and I kid you not, there was like what felt like 50 doctors and nurses in this tiny little ICU room. There was somebody standing up on a ladder kind of dictating and telling like what's going on and how things are happening. And doctors are talking and trying to figure out why she's coding and they can't resuscitate her and somebody's doing CPR. And I'm just standing there like pleading with God, like, don't let this be the end. Like, even though in my gut, I knew this was probably an aortic aneurysm, just like my mom passed away from. That's just what happens with people with VEDS. And so I'm pleading with Jesus. I'm praying and praying. I don't even know who was around me. I knew my dad was standing next to me with the chaplain and the nurse and somebody that had people on either side of me. But just like praying in a way I've never prayed before for the miracle, for God's miracle to show up, knowing that that was the only thing that was going to save her life and save life as we knew it. And then all of a sudden the doctor, like her main doctor that she had, looks over at my dad and I, and he's like, I really think this is an aortic aneurysm. There's nothing we can do for that besides keep trying. And if it's not, hopefully she will come back around. But if it is, it's just pumping the rest of the blood until it's through her heart. And my heart just sank, like my entire, everything inside of me was just breaking and shattering in slow motion. Like, I don't wish there was words to really put through the emotion. And again, like, just praying in the spirit and asking God for the strength and like to be there for the boys and how is this going to look? And like, God, if you show up, what a miracle that could be. How many people could come to faith because like you just did the impossible.
Yeah.
Like, I know better than God what life is supposed to look like. But in that moment, it's grasping for anything and everything that could possibly keep life the same as what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then the doctors basically like decided like, this is it. There's nothing. We've done everything we can. We can't get a pulse in any limb anymore. And they let the red line quit beeping. And it's just that long, steady beep, long straight line. And I felt God's arms wrap around me, like physically could feel it around my body. And he said, her race is over. It is time for her to come home. And I knew, like I said earlier, like I knew waiting in the room or in the waiting room that I knew it was done, but it was like God saying it was like, okay, there is no coming back from this. Like, this is the new chapter we have to write. And again, I argued with him that like, but what about her boys? Like, they still need her. They still are going through trials of their own that they're trying to figure out. And it was like, God just said to me, He's like, I've prepared you for this. I've prepared you for this moment. She has given everything that she has to offer. And that was just, again, just that shattering, crippling. I think I fell to the ground at that moment and just, how are we going to do it? Like at that point, there was just that totally overwhelmed and brokenness, but peace, knowing I heard his voice, knowing that like, that was my daddy's voice. Mm. And through challenges that have come in past years and just having to be in a place of total dependence on Jesus, definitely not to the extreme of what this situation was. But as I look back, like God totally prepared me for that total dependence mm-hmm. in him in that moment, and knowing that when he speaks truth. And when he says it's going to be okay and that he's prepared me, like he actually has. And in that mm-hmm. moment, I didn't feel it. I didn't want to feel it. I just wanted my sister back. I wanted my best friend back. I wanted my kids' auntie back. But there's security in knowing you heard the Father's voice.
Amen. Gregory, what are you feeling at this moment after? I know Jennifer's, you know, in the room kind of observing what's going on. Are you at the hospital? Do you know what emotions are you feeling right now?
I was at the hospital at that point in time. And it was interesting because you take in your flesh thinks, well, who is this chaplain to be praying with my wife? I don't have a clue who this guy is. Why is he here? And God had taken that, a friendship that I had from years ago, I still have today, and taken his mentor, so to speak, and that was that chaplain. And like, so I had some relationship with him that I knew I could trust his heart and trust him very sincere. And so I look at that and think how God, like, honestly, just until I knew we talked about it, but I don't know if we've ever talked about it again, but like how God has a hand in something so small, like just that you could trust at that point in time that God's presence could come in, because like, had it not been him, had it been some guy that you've never seen before, your comfort, your, that was a whole new thing. But no, at that point I whirlwind spinning. I didn't know, what does God have in store? There's a lot of things that we've talked about. I don't know if this is the right time, but where God has led up to this point, this like, he's given me glimpses of like, this is what five boys, being the dad of five boys, being the team of five boys to raise five boys, what it's going to look like. And I mean, I have pictures. I literally just last night we were talking about how, you know, there were small glimpses of like what this is going to look like. Just on my time hop last night of me with five boys, it was 3 years ago. We went on a walk. And then the few months before she passed away, we had, you know, it had taken in basically these five boys and hang out with them. And, you know, they grew up together and that's fine. But it's just like, there was these small glimpses that I caught myself as just the dad being with these five boys, never understanding that this is God's design all the way through. So at that point in time in the hospital, it was just like, it's like in a wrestling match, you know, you get that guy that tags you out, like, okay, you're in now. And it was like, I got that slap from God. It's like, all right, hit me on the side of the back. It's like, it's your turn. And so it was like, all right.
Okay.
It's going to be a win.
Yeah.
It's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
Leading up to her death, like knowing that there was a possibility, a high possibility that I would be burying her, and just like processing through my mom's passing and trying to just figure out like, how do I be okay with losing my sister, and having peace that it is the right timing. I started after her husband passed away when Joshie was a 1 year old. I started praying that God would, that he wouldn't take her until they were ready, that he wouldn't allow her to die until she's given Andrew and Joshua everything that she had to offer them as a mom. And that our household would be ready to accept two new family members, like immediate family. We did a lot of life together, but you know, when you're living under the same roof, you change. Like, I got to be auntie and do fun things. And I backed her up in discipline, but I didn't have to discipline. Yeah. I didn't have to put those rules and boundaries in place. It was just backing Janae up. So praying that, like, I was very specific, 10 years ago, in praying that, like, how...
Are you talking about when she had this first splenic aneurysm?
No, after Josh died.
Okay.
But just that God wouldn't do it until, like, all these pieces had come into place. So standing in ICU and then him telling me, like, I've prepared you for this and it is time. It's her job is done. Like, it was just that prayer that I'd been praying.
Yeah.
He totally reiterated, like, yeah, we've done this. We've prepared. I know. And it just added, it gave me a peace that wasn't, it's what I always thought I would have, but it wasn't expected, I guess is a good way of putting it.
Yeah. So she has passed away. What do these next couple days look like? What is going through your minds, detail wise, emotion wise? What does that look like?
All those years of facing this, like facing her illness, I didn't realize how much of a burden I carried. And it was like that first night coming home from the hospital. I went to bed and plugged my phone in next to my nightstand. And it was like, I don't have to have my phone next to my nightstand anymore. I don't have to have it on to make sure the volume's up so that if Janae has an issue, I need to be right there. Like, it was kind of that, like, a burden was lifted in some respects, but it was also part of my identity, I think, was getting lost because I had put so much into being the sister and being a caretaker and helping in any way I can, whether it was when she was on a good health spurt and it was just helping with the kids while she was at work, or if it was when she's in the hospital and we take the kids in and we're advocating for her in the hospital because this disease is not well known. Mm. There was lots of nurses and doctors that didn't necessarily handle things right. So there was an identity thing that I let go at that point that I actually didn't really put two and two together until a couple weeks ago, how much of my identity was wrapped in taking care of my sister and her and the boys. And it was, so I had pictured like leaving the hospital with Andrew and Joshy. And that day we all walked out together and we went to their house, and it was like what do you call it when you have seen what's happened? I guess, yeah, kind of surreal. Like a deja vu type thing.
Yeah.
Like we're all walking down that hall in ICU and or out of ICU, and all five of the boys are standing in a row. Mm. And I think Andrew was holding Asher, which is our youngest.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was just like, I had seen it before. It was a painted picture and okay, this is what our life's going to be. And it was kind of a pull up your bootstraps and get ready for a ride because it's not anything we expected.
Yeah.
The kids kind of handled things better in the moment than I ever expected. Mm. Andrew wanted to be back at school the next day. Mm. And Josh was like, heck no, I just want to be at home with my family. Mm. We had family but come.
I think that's also, I don't want to interrupt you, but as far as Joshy goes, Andrew, that was a way I think he coped with it. But Joshy had a burden lifted from him. Because he wanted to be with his mom at all times. And there's no chance you could take him away from that, from her. You know, as far as sometimes just staying in bed with her, like just wants to be present with her.
Yeah.
And so going to school could be a struggle. And this is a big day that he had feared. So we didn't realize how much that boy carried that burden with him until his mom passed. And like that small burden off a 10-year-old child how that's fair, how that's questionable. It's like the fact that he can feel that, like it's hard. No, it's not going to devalue his emotions, but like, yeah, he stayed home from school, but like it was definitely a new processing.
And were the boys aware? I mean, like Jennifer, you had a knowing that because you had walked through what your mom had walked through, that at some point this was going to happen. Did the boys and Janae have those conversations, or what did that look like? All the time.
It was all the time. We were very, I think it was one of those because it caught all, like our whole family so off guard when my mom passed away. She was totally fine. Just like Janae, like there was no big deal. My parents were actually going on a vacation and she had an aneurysm on the car ride to Bent. And it was just 1 minute she was fine. The next minute she was in heaven.
Yeah.
And I was 15. And so we were very, very open with the kids, and Janae's body was just more brittle than a normal person would be. And so, so we had conversations. Like I even had conversations with my kids cause they'd want to wrestle and tackle Auntie. It's like, no, you can't do that. That hurts her. Her body can't handle that. Yeah. And we just lived every day as it was the last. We talked with, like, Janae struggled with blood pressure stuff at one point, and
it became part of your lives without knowing.
Yeah. It very much was a part of our everyday life, and blood pressure was high. And so she had to have conversations with Andrew and Joshy, like, when you push me and make me angry, that raises my blood pressure and that's not healthy for me. And so as a single mom with a lot of that, like she had to be open with them because she didn't have the backup to come in and support her in the same way some might have.
Yeah, there's no tag you're it when you're a single mom like that.
Yep. It was her.
Yep.
Yeah. And so that was Joshy's, actually, like that day was his worst nightmare that he could have ever pictured. In first and second grade, he would literally chase Janae out of the school crying, wanting her, because he didn't want her to die while he was at school. He wanted to be with her. And so, like, there's one part of me that it absolutely breaks my heart. And I'm like, God, why did you choose his worst nightmare for the way it to happen? But my dad and Gregory picked the boys up from school that day, and they both knew without them saying anything that their mom was not okay.
Wow.
And we've had those conversations since, and they've kind of shared, like, Josh, he's like, I knew when I saw Papa at my school that my mom died.
Yeah, no, me and your dad picking up Joshua and then, you know, Andrew.
Yeah.
That was great.
I struggled with panic attacks. I've had a little bit of anxiety that I've dealt with, but it's always been fairly manageable. I can usually pinpoint what's going on to, like, resolve the problem on my own for the most part over the years. But the day after she passed away, Gregory got all the kids to school, and I just couldn't get out of bed. Like, getting out of bed seemed like the hardest thing. And so it was that, like, pep talking yourself, like, okay, just what's the next thing I can do? Next right choice to make myself healthy, because I've walked grief. Like, I've had to bury so many family members.
Just the simple daily task, not difficult. That's the brushing your teeth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I can just remember, I think it was either the day after or the second day after she died, like, I had gotten through the shower and I had worship music playing of some kind, and I don't remember even what song came on, but it triggered something and I just lost it. And I'm just like, I can't breathe, but I'm breathing. My throat feels like somebody's choking me, but there's nothing on my neck. Like, I can remember just trying to pull my t-shirt down, feeling like somebody was choking me, and I couldn't get that feeling to go away. And Gregory just coming in beside me and just talking, just praying over me and, like, telling me how to breathe. It's almost like just the simple fact of breathing became hard.
Like a voluntary thing became involuntary.
It's like the weight of everything. Like, yeah, one burden got lifted, but now I'm responsible for taking care of a preteen and an elementary big kid. Like, my guys are all younger. And just the weight of like having to do it right. And I think there's a perfection part that I struggle with, like trying to be perfect at it. I don't want to mess up. I don't want to make the wrong choice. It's not that I want to be perfect, but I just want to do the best. And sometimes doing the best, I think, gets disguised as perfection. And that's not, God doesn't call us to be perfect. He calls us to be at his feet. And if we're not at his feet, if we're not letting him hold us and carry us through it, we're going to be doing it out of our own strength instead of out of his.
Yeah.
And so those panic attacks consistently stayed around for probably a couple months, fighting this mental battle of, like, I can't even clean my own house. I'm a horrible mother. Why can't I even just like wipe my toilets down in my sink after like I'm done getting ready in the morning? Like basic things that come very natural to me to just tidy up after myself, tidy up after the family. I literally couldn't do them. There was nothing I could convince myself to get enough oomph behind me to do it. And so I constantly feel like a failure at like everything in my life, because it was, as a mom, like how to discipline my kids. I'm like, you guys are just talking too much. I can't do it. Like, tap out. I'm done. I'm going to the bedroom.
Well, and I think this is one of your lies that like the enemy instilled in you about like, you're a failure. You shouldn't be crippled by this. This is sad that you're in this state of mind, Jen. Like, there's nobody else that's in this situation. And I think you started to believe that you were a fault, you were a failure, you still, you know, and as we go forward, like there's days that like you feel like you just can't, you're the only one in this game, in this life.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of women or men for that matter get to that spot. Like, I'm just a failure, I just can't succeed. And I think that it became overwhelming for you.
Yeah, because it was every area. It was everything I do. You know, I struggled before Jenny passed away just feeling like a not good enough mom. Like, I should be, my kids shouldn't be acting out. They should tell the truth. Like, we have one little guy that just tells big stories all the time, like when he was little. And the teacher was constantly like, oh, he lied to me today. I'm like, well, yes, it's a lie, but he's kind of just manipulating the truth, which is internalized. But it was like, I took that as a reflection of me and my lack of ability to parent my kids. And so, but like, I could still cook dinner. I could still maintain a tidy house. Our relationship was still good, but it's like after her death, like all those lies, because everything that I was able to control and keep a handle on, I now all of a sudden couldn't.
Well, I think that's where there's a lie, is because you were being told you couldn't keep a lie. Couldn't take care of kids, couldn't be a parent, you couldn't do those things. But that was garbage, because you were still, like, you may have struggled, but the house was still clean, the things were still in order, the kids are still happy, there's still joy there. And so you were succeeding. And so, like, that's what sucks. That's why I was so angry with God. Like, why can't you just show Jennifer how she's succeeding in such a way that, that was really hard for me to watch, because like, you were succeeding, even though you didn't feel like it, you were.
So as a husband, Gregory, you're watching your, you know, wife and mama of your kids have anxiety attacks and you're being there. What does that look like to just be support? What did that look like for you? Did you feel like you didn't know what to do, or did you feel like God was giving you words of affirmation or encouragement? What did that look like from your perspective?
I think it would change from time to time, but a lot of it was just being present with her and affirming her feelings was more important to her, because I can't relate. I couldn't put into perspective, why is she feeling this way? Like, are you kidding me? Like, house looks pretty clean to me. Everything's put together. Like, you're amazing. But like, so I couldn't, they were not real feelings for me. And so without telling Jennifer, you're making this up, I had to figure out how to like, look, let's pray for this. Let's comfort you. Let's, and I really came down to like a comforting understanding that there's somebody there standing by side. Cause I didn't do any, I don't think I did anything special besides just really just being there with you. Like in times of the panic attack, I literally just remember sitting there in the bathroom floor next to you when you had a panic attack. Like there's nothing I can do besides prayer. Like I'm not some map. You pick her up and run around with her, but what's that going to do? Like, and so it was just a matter of like trying to speak truth into her life. And that's where I think I got a lot of like, and I went to a lot of different buddies and talked about it, but it was literally a matter of figuring out how can I, cause I'm a man, I'm going to fix this problem. My wife has a problem. I'm going to fix it for her. And it became like trying to figure out how to surrender that to God, to like, this is not my issue. This is her issue that I need to help her get through. And so that was where I was stuck. I was like, there's nothing you can do besides just listen to God's voice and be present. Wow. So I think that's really what it was.
That's so good, because especially when we have friends that go through grief, I think a lot of times we'll put up walls because we feel like we don't have the right words, or we don't know how to fix this, you know, the problem, because how can you? But what you just communicated, that's what we all need when we're walking through grief. We need someone to sit by us, not necessarily to give us step 1 through 3 of how to fix the situation, but to just be listened to just be heard, to be soaked in prayer. And I think as Christians, even though we know that there's power in prayer, we forget how powerful it is. You know, sometimes we make it our last resort when God moves mountains. He wants to, you know, way deep into those emotions with us, because that's where the healing can begin. So I think that you, A+, husband of the year. It's good to be at a place where you don't have to have all the answers, but you just go in deep with your wife. I love that. So, okay, we've talked about a couple days through. What does transitioning look like? I know you guys did the funeral, but how do you blend this family? What does this look like in the middle of the mess? How do you do that?
You don't.
God's grace.
God has orchestrated everything, like you said.
Yeah. It's definitely, we've talked a lot about like, how we made it through a year and a half and we all don't want to kill each other. Like we actually like being around each other. The only thing I can give it to is that God has just showed up over and over and over. And we have prayer warriors, probably more beyond than what we even know, consistently praying for us and giving us direction, and us surrendering the old way of how we parented, the old way of how we did family is not how we can do it now. When you're blending families together, you used to do it, it just doesn't work.
It's almost
anymore.
As if you took the rules of the family of five and the rules of the family of five, put that gone away and open up this now a new family of seven. And you started re-scribing the rules of like, this is how life goes. This is the pecking order. And that was the challenge of like, I don't know if that's an appropriate time to talk about, but like it became very significant that Joshua was the baby of the two brothers, you know, that, you know, Andrew was the oldest and Joshua was the younger. And so Andrew led the house. I mean, there was really no man in the house for a series of years. And so Andrew was that oldest, and he was the leader. And so then Joshua was kind of the baby. And then you have our oldest Wyatt that was the oldest. And then it's a very sincere, very joyful, very happy. It's just a great kid. But he like all of a sudden like took you that you fought for your leadership, that you've been raised by God, and said, hey, your leadership is no more. Here's your position over here. You were just a middle guy now. And so he fought his own battle. Like, why did I just lose a position? What did I do wrong? And so
he had to figure out how to now take orders from the big brothers. Like they kind of like, we're not brothers. We're cousins. But you know, when you all live in the same house together, we call them brother cousins because no, there's a lot. You guys are now brothers and you just need to get over the cousin aspect. But there are sites where like, no, Andrew and Joshua, you guys have a bond that the other three, Wyatt, Gavin, those three have a bond that the other two aren't going to totally grasp. So Wyatt had to figure out like how to take orders from the big brothers that have always just been the fun, happy-go-lucky, do whatever I want because they were cousins. And so Andrew walked on water in our boys' eyes
previous to
all of this. He was their hero. He would play with them. Like when we'd go over to their house, he was just there. Andrew could do no wrong in their
eyes.
He was
the oldest, funnest, coolest cousin that you could ever want. And yeah. I mean, he had done specific things that have literally led into this like simple God's design of like stuff from giving a hoverboard when the kids had prayed and God give us a hoverboard. Andrew had saved up his money and bought this hoverboard, used it for a year. And then one year he's like, you know, I feel like this should be yours. And then he gave it to the brothers. And so all of them now, sorry, I call them brothers, but he gave them to him. And then a year and a half later, or the next Christmas, he gets it back in a weird way. To now it's in his own home. It was out with it for a year, but it was just that obedience to God that he felt like he should. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Andrew got kicked out from being the coolest, oldest brother or oldest cousin to like, oh, you're my brother now. And now you tell me what to do. And I can't get away from you. And so that was that struggle for him. Like he lost a role too. He's not that cool, big cousin anymore. Now he's a brother and now he has to be with him all the time. He can't just be that cool uncle.
Cousin.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking about us and same perspective.
It's the same. Yeah. So there was a pecking order that had to readjust.
And that
took months because Joshy and Asher were the two babies. And no matter how much you fight it, like the baby of the family is the baby of the family. And the world revolves around them to some extent. And so when Andrew and Joshy moved in, it was kind of retraining Joshy, like, you're still the youngest brother to Andrew, but now you need to step up and be an example to the other three. Like you don't get to just play this victim role anymore because you're now leading the example of what they need to be doing. And
that's not immediate either. It's been a year, of growing that blended part of like, hey, look, you get to be that example for them. And I think changing that in Joshua and Andrew is like, it wasn't just Joshua and Andrew for each other. Now it was like, hey, the way I do things, the kids can do that. So if they see me reading my Bible every day, those boys will do it. If they see me yelling at my brother every day, they're going to yell at their brother every day. And so I think them over the last year and a half now, they've been able to kind of grasp that, like, I am the leader. I am the things I do around the house, these boys will pick up after. And so,
yeah. Well, and I think there was also a lot of just them, all of us accepting, like, this is our new life. And no matter how hard we push back, no matter how, you know, grief, you go through an anger period where you just hate the world because it's not fair. And I think everybody kind of went through that. The two younger ones replayed the day that she died and wanted to hear everything step by step for months, probably like Christmas time. So at least 3 months, I would have to lay in their bed at night and retell how she died and why she's not coming back, because their little 6 and 7 year old brains just couldn't fathom death. And
that's, I think, what ignited an emotional part for us. It's like, why does it have to be now when my Asher, Gavin, and Wyatt at that point, why do they have to not understand it? Because Andrew and Joshy had reality being talked to them. It never really, obviously it had to set in when she actually passed, but like over the years they understood it. And we had some conversation with Asher, Gavin, and Wyatt, but I just don't think that they really truly understand what could happen. And there's been lots of nights that are extremely hard to go to bed without Auntie just being, not even being, because she wasn't here, just being able to go see her.
Yeah.
What was it like thinking about Joshy and thinking about Andrew, how they had been raised by basically for their entire lives? I mean, they had a dad at a very young age, but what was it like for them to experience being raised by a single mom and then being pivoted into a home with a mom and a dad? were they able to receive from you, Gregory, you know, a male role, a male perspective?
Oh, it's so easy. It's a piece of cake.
I'm glad y'all should write that.
In some respects, that's probably been one of the hardest things.
They were just, they had no male authority figure per se in their life because they had lost their previous dad, 2010, Janae's first husband. And so he wasn't present. And so like they had there's no father figure. And so there was like, Andrew was the man of the house per se. Like he didn't pay bills and he didn't, you know, run the show and be the spirit of the house and listen to God. But there was definitely that like come into my house and he was hit by a brick wall or freight truck, whatever you want to call it, because he was like, you know, where he could mouth off to his mom, it didn't work here. And so it was a whole new beginning and it still is. It's a challenge all the time. God's done incredible things. But still there's always that authority challenge. And there's this little bit of like, are you going to catch me? Or, I'm going to push you away to a point that I don't know if you're going to stick around. So I'm not going to listen to you. And so, there's been that reassuring over the last year and a half, 18 months, that I'm not going anywhere. There's no choice. I don't have a choice. I'm not allowed to. There's no chance. And so, yes, no, that's been one of the hardest things. I think actually that's been the hardest thing, like I have dealt with, period. I don't know if it's been just necessarily the hardest for both of us, but it's then on her side, it's hard for her to watch. But like, if I ask you to do something, I need you to just do it. I'm not being unfair. I don't feel like I am. Have a conversation with me, but don't argue with me and disrespect me. And so it became like that long drawn out thing. And so it's an incredible journey for sure. God's had his hand in it, but it was definitely like, how do we fix this? Because all it's doing is degrading somebody. I don't want to degrade my boy. Like he's not a failure. He's incredible. He's talented. He's, you know, both of these boys. And so it became like a very obvious problem. And it actually went from like, when it hit, it became hard at first. And I think it just continued downhill for a long spiral until like the last
hit bottom.
Yeah. There was a long, long go of like probably 6 months ago per se that like when things really started to hit the rise. And I don't know if it was when I kind of seeked advice or God or whatever, as far as to push through, but like it was understanding what truly was happening with those boys to understand like, why is there so much pushback and why is there so much, you know, I've been involved in their life since they were born, both of them. Yeah. So she, but it was that, I think it was that matter of hitting bottom for them to understand, hey, let's do this together. Let's grow together. We need to know that I got you, you got me, and we're moving forward.
Well, and they had to, because Janae was a single mom and was sick, like there was a lot that they were just involved in a lot of adult conversations.
Oh man.
They didn't get to just be a 10 and 13 year old boys. Like they had to be involved in those to know what was going on. They weren't necessarily part of the decision-making process, but they were just influenced by the illness, I believe.
That is actually something to touch on. Like the fact that these boys were not just 10 and 12 year old boys. Yeah. They may be body 10 and 12 year old boys, but these boys are way more mature than they should have had to be because they were involved in life decisions that I hadn't thought of until I married Jennifer. Like, and so like, yeah, that's huge. Is that was a huge blessing because we got to kind of give them that burden, like stop carrying that yoke of your mom and your life decisions. Yeah. Go play, go ride a bike, go jump a mountain bike down a hillside. Don't worry about you got to be there for your mom. You get to do these crazy, silly kid things. And so that was pretty cool to get to be that guy that just says kind of unleash and,
But it was a process, you know, when you have yuck in your life and God says, don't carry this, this isn't your burden to carry, and he lifts it, how many times do we go back and still pick up that same stinking thing? And so it was an over and over with the kids telling them, like, just don't worry about that. Like, this is an adult conversation. You don't need to figure out how, like, I think there was one time with Andrew, was making a grocery list, and he's like, well, you need to buy this, this, and this, and this. I'm like, I'm planning dinner, like, back off. Like, go be a kid, don't care about dinner. Like, I appreciate it. And it's this, it's a huge juggling act of how do we teach them how to just have fun and not carry these heavy burdens. But at the same time, they've had these burdens for a reason. And how do we cultivate that to like a healthy boundary with inside of how we're raising up the other three and teaching them like, there's like, you get to be a kid and just enjoy this part of your life. But we don't want to crush that so much that they forget how to be responsible and like eventually want to move out and have their own life.
If y'all could give advice to someone who's watching or someone who's listening, their life has been turned upside down, something unexpected happened to them, and they have all of these questions and how's it going to turn out? I want each of you to respond. What would you say to them today?
I was told shortly after my sister passed away, because when somebody dies, you've got all these circles. So like the inner circle is like your bullseye is the people that did everyday life. So if we use Janae as an example, whoever was in her life on a day-to-day basis, the people she worked with, the people she talked to on the phone, all those people are the most impacted by it. And then you have a little bit outskirts, like people she did ministry with. And then it just kind of goes out of that. So the people in that inner circle, if you look at your life as a chessboard, like everybody, when somebody dies, your chessboard goes up in the air and eventually all those pieces start coming back down. Well, a lot of people, all their pieces still fit on their board and they can just put them back and they may have to tweak a few of them because she's not here anymore because she was a part of those pieces. But the people that are in that inner circle, those pieces don't go back together. And that's something I'm constantly, even like a week ago, I was a mess and in tears because life is just not getting easier. And I look at it and it is getting easier, but there's still those days where I'm like, I feel like we're still fighting the same battles we were a year ago. Like, why aren't these getting better? And it's because those pieces can't go back together. I can't put my Hobby Lobby piece back because my sister was a part of it. She was my go-to hand, headed to the store, come with me. As ridiculous as it sounds, something silly the boys do. I want to call her and be like, hey, guess what they did? And I know she's going to think it's cute and funny because she knows them the best out of everybody. And there may be other people that are like, yeah, call me, I'd love to hear it. But they weren't their auntie. And Janae is the only one who like had these cute little nicknames for them. And so sharing it with somebody else, it's just not the same. Yeah, I can, but she was that piece. And so there's nothing on our checkerboard, our chessboard, that gets to go back where it was before she died. Like, none of those pieces are the same for all seven of us. So I think it's remembering when your life gets turned upside down, even when years pass, you're still not expected to have it back together. And it's not going to ever feel normal per se, because you have to create a whole new board. You have to create a whole new normal. So the normal of what you used to have is not ever what it's going to look like, because that person's not there, that incident didn't happen, or whatever turned your life upside down, there's a part of your heart that's never going to be there whole again. It's going to be broken. And you're going to have to go through the process of allowing the scab to heal over, and then the hard work of allowing that scab to turn into a scar and not get infected with bitterness and hatred and anger and all of those things, but allowing God to heal it and a scar to form over it so that it can't get ripped off and get reinfected and cause problems, but that there can be a bittersweet, a bittersweet to whatever it is that's happened in your life, because you've grown from it and you've allowed God to be in the middle of it. But that is way easier said than done.
What about you, Gregory? What would you say?
As far as I think the biggest, hardest thing for anybody to do is to let go of what you used to have. Mm-hmm. It's to stop holding on to like, this is what I want. I want this back. I want this family. I want this. Like, it's not coming back. Like, I have my family of five and with three boys. And so my heart, I found myself going back to, I just want my five back. And there was nothing wrong with Andrew and Joshy, but it was just hard. And things just, because they were hard, I wanted to give up. And I think that was really the understanding, is like, I gave that example of the family of five or rules and the way life works. And then you got this family of seven and rules, like literally I imagine tacking that up on the wall and putting that up and like just absorbing that. Look, this is the new family. You have to absorb the family of seven. And I think that was the hardest thing. I found myself retreating back, kind of like that same old yoke that you pick up. I found myself retreating back to, I want this family five back. I want this. We're just going to go back to this. It's just so hard. And so like, I think if you can find a way to embrace the new chapter. So if you lose somebody or you gain somebody or whatnot, you have to turn that chapter and start writing on a new paper or new chapter, start with the next one, because you cause issues by trying to bring back what wasn't like this before, what wasn't. And so that's my advice, is you have to turn the page. And that is where we have struggled with. And it is so hard. It is not easy. And I can vouch for that. I mean, I find myself back in chapter five all the time. There's no six. It's just chapter five and then family seven. So it's chapter seven. I find myself back there all the time. I'm like, it's not relevant to our life anymore. You have to be present in chapter seven. And so I think that is my important thing, is just turn that page, be willing to not just be willing to bring the boys into our house, but like, you have every single thing. It's just them, period. We're all together. We're all a family of seven. Family of five is no longer, and we're just here. And so I think that's my opinion. That's what I would say, is just try to close that chapter, which is hard to do.
And I think with that, like what he was saying, is it's not only that we're grieving the loss of my sister, but an auntie and a mom, but we're also grieving the loss of what both of our families looked like before. And I think for Gregory and I, we had to grieve that our family of five no longer exists. Like, that's, it's not a thing. It ended on September 11th. It was done. And to just allow space to be able to say it's okay that it's done. It's okay that we're changing.
I found myself multiple times praying that God would make it. Like, obviously that's not possible. It ain't going to happen, but definitely have found myself in that spot. Like, and God was like, well, so what would that do? Hard. And so, yeah, multiple times it's been like,
I think it shows your guys' courage. A couple different things stand out to me in your story. One is that you still are willing, right? You know that there's no other option. Whether you have your emotions and your feelings, you still understand that you are called to this. Like, y'all are anointed for this. I see that. And whether or not it feels like you're equipped, you're willing to wade in with Jesus and say, we have no idea, but you take the wheel, you drive this. And, you know, I'm thinking about the families who maybe are newly blended because they've just entered into a new marriage, or maybe they've, you know, done foster care, or maybe they've adopted a child. When those dynamics change, sometimes it doesn't feel like the warm, gushy feelings always, like the delivery of a baby that you've been anticipating and expecting. Yeah. But I think what's really important that you guys are modeling is love is a choice. In marriage, in relationships, love is a choice. And sometimes it doesn't feel great. And sometimes it doesn't feel natural. But y'all are making that choice. So I just want to say to you, I'm so proud of you. I know if Janae was sitting here right now, she would be like, woohoo! Like, she would be your biggest fan. She would be your biggest cheerleader. We need to wrap up, but I want from each of you just one more thing. Like you mentioned, with all things, there's the bittersweet. There's the beauty from the ashes. So what is one thing that God has shown up in? I know God has done multiple things, but what is one thing you want to highlight of beauty and Jennifer from this whole journey you've been on so far?
It's hard to just pick one because there are so many areas that God has just shown up in big ways. I think our biggest blessing, our most current blessing that God has showed up in is about a year and a half before Janae passed away, we had the opportunity to possibly buy a house with some acreage in Pleasant Hill. And
larger than what we
had. Yeah, about twice the size of what our current home was. And we just kept pushing on doors, but weren't getting anywhere. And then when she passed away, we're like, oh, like, now we need that house. Like, we were in a, what was it, 1,200 square feet? Mm-hmm. 1,200 square foot house with seven people, small bedrooms, only one like universal space, living room, dining room, kitchen was all together. And we were just on top of each other all the time.
And then we were told to stay.
Yeah, and then COVID happened. But that's a whole nother, that's a whole nother podcast. but yeah, just anyways. So we started pushing on doors again to try and get to be able to buy this house. And it just financially was not working. There was other dynamics involved that just doors were still not opening. And I felt one day when I was praying about it, I felt like God just said, like, you have to be in tight quarters to get through this season, like to be able to grow and come out of it. The kids have to be tight to for those buttons to be pushed to work out the junk. And so I just kept telling the kids, they'd get mad because somebody was in their space or in their room or they won't leave them alone. I'm like, well, you better get your act together and get on your knees before Jesus, because nothing's going to change until your hearts are right. And there was kind of a, like a laughing, joking with it. But at the same time, like my mama heart knew my kids had to figure out how to get along, like the five of them, before God was going to give us something better. And this last November, we actually moved into that house in Pleasant Hill and have 2,200 square feet, something like that. We've got two living areas. We have a spare bedroom so kids can have sleepovers and they've got their own space with their friends. We have 5 acres to go shoot bow and arrows and ride quads and play football and hit baseballs. And it's really, it's just been surreal to see where we're at now. And my pleading with kids sitting on bunk beds, like, just get your hearts right, guys. Like, you have to press into Jesus. It's not just Uncle and I doing it. Like, it is our whole family has to figure things out. We all have to work together before God can use us. And I really, like, I'm starting to get little glimpses of ways that God may use our family and just the passion and the hearts. Andrew just started serving in our church and he's running the cameras and like seeing him finally back to where he was serving the Lord more than just in home. Like there's,
that's today's biggest,
as thing. as our hearts start lining up together and lining up with Jesus, you know, you get this right, then this is going to get right. And, but when you're dealing with grief, this is hard because God had control over it. And he still said, this is the best for you. And, it's just trusting that plan and saying yes to Jesus every day when, and yes, saying yes sometimes is just getting up and taking a shower and bawling your eyes out through it. Like saying yes is just finding macaroni and cheese for dinner because I am feeding my kids. It doesn't have to be this perfect, well-balanced meal, but saying yes is putting food in my kids' bellies. But that's, it's just coming back to Jesus at the end of it all. And if my kids know that we love them and they know that Jesus loves them, then that's a win for the day.
Amen.
And just fall through the cracks.
Yep. Okay, Gregory, I want some beauty from you. What do you got?
what's the question again? No, honestly, I feel like the biggest prize that I can take out of this is if you were to lay our life down this timeline of everything that God has literally orchestrated, every little thing between me losing a job a few years ago to stepping into something we've been praying and desired about for a long period of time, to being able to do the real estate that we do now, to give us during COVID a year off to spend time with the families and build our family of seven. Yeah. There's been so many things that, like, Andrew specifically has deja vu all the time. And I feel like that's just God reaffirming in his heart that this is something he had planned for. Yeah. And so my main
holy moly.
Right. And my biggest thing is, like, I almost feel as if you wanted to know where we will be in 5 years, I could put down all of these things that have happened and I can tell you what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so it's weird to even think that, but, like, I see cool things that God's going to do. I see little things that are, like, literally small glimpses that God opens this door that, like, good luck. The rest of the world is going to have to watch out for this family of seven. Like, we're going to have a cool story. We're going to be able to do cool, incredible things for God. And so I don't know what that looks like. We don't know. We have a heart for youth ministry. So someday that we'll probably get pushed into that and tackle that, whatever that looks like. But that is my take, is, like, this map, I feel like I could almost predict it, what God's going to do throughout. And so all these little things that I'm looking at have just pushed us forward to this awesome spot that we're in,
laying our foundation
to be present with these boys. So
I love it. Well, I know after watching this episode or listening to this episode, people are going to want to connect with you, reach out to you, maybe even ask you questions, maybe ask for prayer. How can they do that?
We are both on Facebook and Instagram.
Perfect.
Yes, absolutely.
All in the show notes for everyone. I'll also link to Janae's episode in season one, her bonus episode, so you can see, like, part one of the story and our continued story. And we might have y'all back. It sounds like you're going to do some crazy things, which we have expectations that God is good. So thank you guys for your time. Thank you for your transparency. Thank you for your vulnerability. Thank you for being willing to wade into the emotions of what this grief life has looked like. But also, I'm so excited for the newness that God has for you. You know, I think about Isaiah and it talks about, like, do you see it? Like, do you see what I'm doing? I'm making all things new. And I'm seeing that in your family. So, and just love you guys. And can't wait to see how God uses your story.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I'm so glad that you got to be a part of this follow-up conversation of this story with Jennifer and Gregory Cummings, and also telling more of Janae's story as well. God has been so faithful. And I know we don't always understand the outcome. And I think there are going to be a lot of things in our lives that we kind of have to put in these little boxes and say, hey, we'll have to just ask Jesus about that in heaven. But I know in my own life, and as I've gotten to interview guest after guest after guest, what we see is God's faithfulness. We see that he is a good, good father. And while we don't always understand his purposes and his plans, they are higher and they are greater than we can ever think, fathom, or imagine. And he's got you and he holds you today. So know that, be encouraged by that. Hey, if you are enjoying this podcast, could you give us a review? By giving us a review, it allows all the podcast platforms to know that you love Bringing Her Hope and the podcast and the stories that it brings, to not only encourage you, but it gives us an opportunity to share it with other people all around the world. And lastly, I wanted to remind you, we are on the socials. We are on Facebook. We are on Instagram. So if you would like to chat with me, if you would like to tell me what your favorite episode is, if you would like to join us in the conversation, you can do so at Bringing Her Hope on Facebook or on Instagram. Okay, friends. Well, until next time, you keep living those brave stories for Jesus. I wanted to take a moment to give a shout out to our sponsor of the Bringing Her Hope podcast, Friends of Hope. Friends of Hope is a nonprofit ministry dedicated to the support of Christian radio, Christian events, new media, and activities that share the good news of Jesus Christ. So thanks again, Friends of Hope, for sponsoring the Bringing Her Hope podcast so we can continue to share more brave and beautiful stories of God's redemption.